All right, well, happy Halloween. I didn't bring any candy, but we can all rush out afterwards. So I'm talking about health and sustainability guidelines. Yeah, I'm just going to jump right into it. Okay. Oh, yeah, no funding disclosures, and that's my disclaimer. It's my opinions. So, a couple years ago, we were tasked down at CDC to start to develop guidelines for federal facilities around the types of foods that would be sold or purchased or sold by vendors. That includes vending machines, cafeterias. When we started this process, we weren't exactly sure how it was going to work. At CDC, we had already begun a certain degree of this process, looking at our own facilities, our own cafeterias, our own vending machines, and trying to determine what foods could be sold there, and try to apply some sort of policy to improving the quality of those foods. But we weren't too far along in the process, and we had a lot of roadblocks in figuring out exactly how it would work when you deal with changing contractual relationships and relationships such as vending, which often aren't contractual and are very difficult to actually put any sort of guideline upon. So we came together as a federal working group across HHS, USDA, and GSA. And GSA is the General Services Administration. It's just FYI, if you don't know what GSA is, they manage all the federal buildings. They are a federal agency. They manage about 10,000 buildings. They're, I would say, most unique in the federal government in that they pay their own salaries. They're not paid by tax dollars. They pay their own salaries, which is an interesting aspect. They're a business organization. That's my point of pointing that out. So what we did was our overall goal was to increase the availability of healthy food, and that includes vending, at federal work sites for all federal employees. Now, as we started out, this was really for HHS and early on it was just for HHS. And then we brought GSA on board, and USDA worked with us early on. And GSA decided, well, we'll work on these guidelines with you. We'll play the business role. You all take the health role. And we will apply these guidelines to all our facilities, when the process was done. So we felt good going into it. We said, okay, what are we going to base these guidelines on? And it was obvious the dietary guidelines for Americans 2010 were going to come out shortly. This was, mid-2010 when we were, early 2010 when we were in this process. And we spent the next year coming up with these guidelines. They were released in March. And they're available at this website. If you type in HHS GSA guidelines, you can see them on the web. Just quickly, what do we mean by health and sustainability guidelines? For health, very simply, from a dietary nutrition perspective, we just tried to align, translate the dietary guidelines into meal, cafeteria, and vending practices. Now, because the dietary guidelines for Americans are not specific like this, there's a certain degree of both leniency as well as interpretation that has to happen in this process. This process can't all be written down. We can put a certain amount of guidelines, we can put a certain amount on a piece of paper for a vendor. But when it comes down to that vendor making good on that and putting the food on a cafeteria line or in a vending machine, there's even more leniency. So the challenge here, the process, is to take the dietary guidelines and remain true to that dietary pattern over time such that persons in a work site, in a cafeteria, or choosing from a vending machine will have a likelihood of choosing foods that overall, over a period of time, will align with the dietary guidelines. We also considered things such as atmosphere, architecture, cleaning, issues such as materials that might affect health adversely, serving ware, and cooking methods, all that may contribute to adverse health outcomes. For sustainability, this includes building design, energy use, waste, cleaning materials, packaging, serving ware. These guidelines were attempted to be and are pushing towards being a very holistic approach to health, not just dietary health, not just nutrition, but a very holistic approach to pushing health back towards the environment. From a sourcing food perspective, we sort of ride a lot on the American Dietetics Association definition of a sustainable food system, which talks about everything from the way foods are produced, how it's produced, how they're grown, how the workers are treated, through production, through consumption, so that the entire system, the entire food system, should be relatively healthy. And we tried to maintain faith to this throughout the development of the guidelines. Guidelines. Why do we use the term guideline? Guidelines actually have a definition, which I was sort of surprised to find out. And it's a light, gentle definition. Whenever people are approached with a dogma, with rules, they don't really want to change. And we've already heard a lot of talk about how do you approach individuals, how do you get people to change. So we didn't want to come across in a hard-hitting, draconian sense. And this is particularly important because we are dealing with making a business case. We're selling these guidelines. Every day when federal workers come to work, and we hope these go beyond the federal workplace, they need to continue to make these choices. If we push them away and they don't consume the foods, then we haven't achieved anything. So guidelines is this sort of gentle way of taking a stages of change approach and moving forward slowly and continually to sort of increase the health of foods. Where do we see these guidelines going? Well, right now, the guidelines as written that were released in March 2011, are for all GSA facilities, and they'll go in as contractual arrangements are renegotiated, and all HHS facilities. And this process is happening. Right now, the guidelines are in 10 buildings nationwide, 10, 12 buildings nationwide, as well as a number of buildings in the D.C. area, and virtually all of the D.C. GSA capital region is moving towards the guidelines in a gradual basis. So we already have a big step on this, even though primarily from a legal perspective, these guidelines don't go into effect until a contract is renewed. Targets. Well, we want to target everything. We want to target the whole food environment. And just a tangent to sort of go back to talking about Halloween and so forth, and to sort of bring in the previous presenters a little bit. What you heard in the first two talks was really a discussion around an active approach to individuals. We're going to tell you how to change your diet. We're going to work with you to change your diet. What I'm talking about here is much more of an environmental approach. It's much more of a passive approach. We're going to change your choices. We're going to change what's available, and we're going to hope that you follow this. And that's part of why changing the environment is so powerful and why food service guidelines are powerful. And they're not powerful just for changing dietary behavior, but they're powerful for changing the food system. So it has to be recognized that this is probably a gradual process. And one of the problems we've had early up is we've had problems sourcing food. There's simply not enough supply to source some of the foods that are in our guidelines. This is a gradual process. That's okay. So we see the effects as being direct. We're actually picking up with individuals and pushing individuals to make changes. A lot of people go to work. People spend a lot of time at work. Work is a very good target for hitting individuals in dietary change. Indirect. People take those practices home. We hope people take those practices home. And then system, that's what I mentioned. Ultimately, you upregulate the production of healthy foods. Examples quickly. We've seen examples in a number of cities, counties, states. All those states don't have guidelines in sort of officially now, but they're all working towards it. Other states are working towards it as well. It depends on where we're at with the state, but many states are working towards this. And then our guidelines and many universities, businesses and schools have been developing guidelines for about the last 10 years. So our approach, just a little bit more about our approach. We took a soft, flexible approach because what we didn't want to do is push people away. We focused on foods and we focused on choices. We focused on increasing the number of healthy choices. This all had to be feasible and it all had to sell. Again, I've said that, I just want to sort of point it out again. Overall, these guidelines need to be sustainable. The guidelines need to sustain themselves. They need to sustain the cafeteria. They need to sustain the vendor. They need to continue to sell. So just a little more about our approach. This is a term that people always like, libertarian paternalism. It is an oxymoron, but I'm good with oxymorons. And if you're in public health, you should be pretty good with oxymorons as well. And I like to think of this as two sets of people that are inside all of us. It's the hungry person and the fed person. And on the right, on the left up there, the economical, that's the fed person. You just ate, you go to the grocery store, you're very rational, you're making really optimal choices based on the information and the resources you have. On the right, you're behavioral, you're hungry. You go to the grocery store and you're grabbing what's available, you're not really worrying about the price, or maybe you are, but you're getting something that's cheap. You're really just thinking about right now and feeding that urge inside you. How do you intervene in these two situations? To the left, for the economical person, for the fed person, the active information presented in the first two talks is quite effective. Those people are taking information, and they probably will regulate their diet, some people will at least, around that type of information. But for many of us in most of our lives, we're in that hungry state. We're grabbing something to go, we're in a rush, we're feeding our kids, we're moving very quickly. That requires changing the environment. That requires a set of the choices that are at the bottom in the red box. Changing the status quo, the default bias, making it so that when you opt out, you have to opt out of a good decision. Choice architecture, so you set foods that are healthier, making them easier to get, where you have to ask someone for the chocolate cake. Not on Halloween, of course. You set it up in the front on Halloween. Overall, you make healthy choices default. This is just sort of another model. Show the same thing in the same way. But I just want to point out a few things with this model. The little guy is doing his best to, or girl, is doing her best to consume healthy food and get some physical activity. And they're empowered by individual and family aspects. Their exposure, or disempowered. Exposure, norms, skills, knowledge, their time, and their individuality. And those things all give them an event. Now, what's happening in the environment is changing the weight on the other end of that lever. And if we have good policy, good legislation, economics, then things such as access, advertising, and affordability will all benefit the ability for that person to achieve those desired goals. So it's sort of a two-pronged approach there. Now, one other point here I want to point out with this is that there's another way to change this whole model and to change that how that lever works. And that's the red line at the bottom about social structures and cultural norms. That's a very powerful, it's hard to do, but it's a very powerful effect because you'll change where the lever functions. So ultimately, if you can change cultural norms or social structures, you have a very powerful tool. So, we walked out of our guidelines pushing healthy choices, making them more accessible, more appealing, and more affordable. Pretty much talked about implementation. The implementation process has been interesting. They're released in March. We have them all over the U.S. now. They're actively going in the D.C. region. I'm happy to talk about during the discussion some on some of the challenges of implementation. There are challenges. When it comes to looking at the guidelines and getting feedback from the public health community, we've had many groups give us credit, many groups give us grief about what's in the guidelines, and that's excellent. We appreciate the feedback. We will be doing an annual revision process where we look at the guidelines and we try to make them more appropriate to functioning. It is key to remember when you're creating something like guidelines for cafeterias or vending that people have to buy the food and that you have to look at your workforce and you have to make a gradual transition towards moving them towards a healthier diet. You can't dump, you can't push food on them they won't eat. I'm not going to the specifics of the guidelines. You all can look that up. I think for to talk about it during discussion if you're interested. Overall, it's just the dietary guidelines. Specifically, how they work in the guidelines is the key. In the guidelines, they provide vendors and cafeteria managers the ability to do this. And that's the key, is to make it translatable into the contractual arrangement. Sustainable practices, I'll mention, as we haven't talked about this much. You haven't heard anything about the dietary guidelines today. We worked with USDA largely on what aspects in these guidelines could really assist us in benefiting the overall functioning of a healthy worksite cafeteria or vending machine. And we looked at waste reduction, recycling, composting programs. We added what we could. We promoted and incentivized reusable containers. And tried to push for as many clean cleaning practices as possible. We also promoted organic food, locally grown, or sustainable foods. And then, as it last but not at all least, is one of the things we push throughout the guidelines, both in the sustainability part as well as the beverage section, is to offer free drinking water. We have letters of support from a large number of groups. As I mentioned, we also have letters of and all these letters were mostly positive, were positive, but we've also had letters from a number of groups suggesting that we change the guidelines one way or the other, and we appreciate that. So that's it. Thank you.